What's up, everybody? Welcome back to This Weird House. I am, as always, Nick Boddick, and today we have a very special guest. He is the co-host, one of the three co-hosts of the Little Stinkers podcast, the best podcast in the game, in my opinion, and third on the list of, well, not third on the list, but the third person from the list of Philadelphia comedians that I am having on this show. He is Mr. Jake Matera. How you doing, Jake?
Hey, Nick. Dude, this is awesome, man. I love the setup.
Thanks, dude.
Yeah, it's you just like, told me about your cats, and I'm just waiting for them to start attacking you.
They will. I think I've made it through one full podcast where they just were asleep the whole time, and they've never granted me that kindness ever again. It was like the second episode, I think.
Dude, people say I have a voice for cats, so
yeah,
I don't know what that means, but we'll see what happens.
I swear to you, there's a part of me that is like a cat whisperer. I've never met a cat who didn't like me.
Like, really?
And we have five now. It was six.
Why do you have so many? You just love cats, or
why
like
do you not?
Keep, or like do you just like or do you see them like on the street? And you're like, okay, I have to take this one in, and it just keeps building, kind of thing.
So, like, I've always loved cats. I've always had cats. Like my family did when I was younger, growing up. And then, so, funnily enough, I have bipolar disorder, and before I knew that, one day I woke up and was like, I want to get a cat. Literally 20 minutes later, I had a cat. It was, I loved it.
That's crazy. Cool. That's awesome, right? Man. And dude, then, cats are like the perfect animal for people with bipolar disorders.
I've been saying the same thing for
because
years.
Because they just like,
dude,
one minute they love you, the next minute they might be just a little standoffish. And you're like, okay, gotta give them some space.
Dude, even more than that, like, my fiance and I, we've determined that like cats are like if autism was an animal.
Maybe.
I don't mean that as an insult. It's like their behaviors are like they are autistic as shit, dude.
Yeah, dude. My kid wants a cat so bad right now, and I can't do it. Like, I'm allergic to cats. Like my eyes, like, and I grew up with cats, and my parents knew I was allergic, and it just like I didn't know what it was not like to not be like congested until I left the house, like after college.
Oh, that sucks.
Like
dude.
During college,
yeah.
Dude, we had two cats. We had a cat named Simba because it was like big during like the Lion King days, and then they got knocked up when they went outside at one point and had a bunch of babies, and all of them sadly died except for one, which my parents obviously named Lucky. But when Simba was getting old, dude, we lived in like this real like it looked like a hoarder's house. It is a hoarder's house. My parents are hoarders, and it crawled up into the vent system and just what we think and died because we had one summer where there was just like nothing but fleas. It was so disgusting.
And just couldn't find the cat
wasn't really like an odor, but it just like disappeared and was just lost in the it was really sad. We're like, we don't know where Simba went. Maybe it's in the woods. And then, like, anyway, we got all these flies, and it wasn't until, like, years later I put it together. I'm like, oh,
my God.
Made
the connection? Yeah.
Yeah.
Dude. Oh, yeah, that sucks, dude. Yeah,
that's brutal.
So the cat I got that day years ago, this was it was September 15th, 2014, I remember.
Oh, wow.
I got her, and then once, because, dude, at the time I was a fucking heroin addict. I had no business having a pet. I didn't have any business having myself. Like I was just the most irresponsible human being alive. But eventually my mom caught wind that I had a cat, and she was like, we're taking this thing to the vet and like getting her all her shit. So I'm like, all right, cool. Turns out she had a heart she was born missing a third of her heart, and she wasn't the vet was like, you will be lucky if she lives to be two. She lived to be 8 years old, which was cool as shit. She just passed away last year.
Which is a bummer, but
I just like, it's honestly one of those things where I'm just like, I got several times more than I expected to from like with her. She was cool.
Yeah.
I didn't mean for this to get all sad and interesting.
Oh dude,
right
no, I can bring this. I can bring the sadness too, man. I just had to put my dog down, and it was, I think I've cried every single day for, since the day we put him down, which was September 11th.
Oh man.
So,
that's our anniversary.
Is it really?
Like, I make the joke every year. I'm just like, yes, our anniversary, Kimmy, never forget. Right.
So well, happy like, belated anniversary to you and, you know, everyone out there celebrating.
Thank you, man. I'm really sorry to hear about your dog, though, dude. That's it's never easy. And like, yeah, I think about that shit, like with these cats too, man, like getting them all. I was like, yeah, great. More cats. Love it. But you never think about that part of it, you know,
dude, I must've made nonstop jokes about him dying, you know, because I was so afraid of it. It was like my defense mechanism for like the last 3 years. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, he's going to, you know, he's getting up there and like, just like, and and then when it finally happened, I was like, oh, I'm prepared. I know what's about
nothing
to go
prepares
now.
You.
Oh boy. Yeah.
Yeah.
All the stuff that pissed me off. I miss so much, but it's
yeah, man.
Like normally if I did a podcast like this, like I'm in my basement and like we have wood floors and like it's just exposed ceiling, as you can see. And like you could just hear the dog just like it was a big pit bull. And he would just like just walk on the floor and you would just hear tap dancing nonstop. And it would drive me crazy. But yeah, now I like wish I could hear it, but.
Right, for sure.
So now I just watched tap dancing on YouTube to help me get by the day.
Coping.
Been learning
mechanism.
Some moves too, man. That Fred Astaire really has something.
Oh man, let's go on to some non-sad stuff, and you know.
When my grandmother died. Oh, sorry.
So I've lost a lot of friends since I got clean.
Man, dude, this could be a really we can make this the saddest podcast ever. People were just listening and crying in their cars, like, oh my God.
Fucking, I listened to this to learn about like horror and comedy. Why am I, why do I want to kill myself right now?
Yeah, dude, it's crazy. Hey, if you're out there struggling with animal death, give us a message and we'll get back to you. I don't know.
Jokes aside, anytime, anybody.
Seriously. Yeah. Sorry. Can I say one more about my dog dying? So he died. We had to schedule it because he was so old. And it, like, we just didn't want our kids like finding him. You know what I mean? Like, it got to that point where like he was like legit shitting on the couch without getting up. I was like, okay, maybe it's time. We scheduled. I'm like, oh, I made jokes about it being 9/11, and then it happened to be 9/11 the day we got. And I was like, this is perfect. And then the night before was the presidential debate, and Trump just starts going off about they're eating the dogs, they're eating the cats, and I'm like. And I'm like laughing about it. I'm like, man, this would be the funniest thing I've ever seen if it wasn't the future of our country.
Right.
And then the next day we go to do the appointment and I'm like, oh my God, I can't even post about my dog because everyone's going to be like, oh, you fucking ate your dog, you big fat piece of shit, huh? You hear it from Trump once and then you, yeah. So yeah, I have yet to make a sad post about my dog because it was, I didn't want everyone thinking I ate him. I did not eat him. Just... The more I say I didn't eat my dog, I think the more people are going to think I did. I did not.
I mean, as long as you're not in Ohio, you should be okay.
Yeah, that is the next state over, but it's like 7-hour drive, I think. So, I think we're good.
Wait, Pennsylvania? You're in Pennsylvania, right?
Yeah, yeah. So that's the next state
borders
west.
Ohio?
Yeah, man. Yeah, so like on the Pittsburgh side.
No shit.
Yeah.
I had no idea. I'm
Wait,
in Wisconsin.
Yeah. Okay.
And for some reason in my head, like I know like the US map, I thought apparently, but like I thought it was like one state down, one state over, which I guess
it
could be.
We have West Virginia right below on like the western side of the state, and then on the eastern side it like has like Maryland and Delaware.
Okay.
And then on the right side we got New Jersey, North New York. Man, we can go through all the geography. Alaska is up there, but it's not close.
Yeah, dude. So speaking of Pennsylvania, I mentioned earlier that I just like I'm a huge fan of just Philly comedy in general. You guys are like the best in the game, in my opinion.
Dude, that's so cool. Thank you, man. Really.
Yeah, dude. What do they call it when you're like a philophile?
A philophile? That's a thing that people are saying.
I don't know if that. Maybe I am.
Yeah.
If I'm just a fan of Pennsylvania, I could be a pedophile. So fucking dumb. I can't believe I just said that.
Oh, dude, I love it. Yeah.
I apologize. That was so dumb.
No, it's okay. Yeah. You have to go knock on all your neighbors' houses and let them know.
Just let I really know like Pennsylvania.
How do you get the kids in the house? It's like, no, Pennsylvania, pedophile. Yes. You know, Harrisburg, Lebanon.
Lebanon?
Yeah, it's a place in PA. Yeah, we got Scranton. The Electric
Scranton
City.
I'm familiar with.
Yes, we have Reading. Oh man, I can keep going.
Mars.
Allentown. Whew.
Dude, so I'm not going to go through the whole story again because I've told it once before in here. Allentown.
Yeah.
Was the site of, well, I should say a flight back from Allentown was the worst I've ever felt in my life.
You flew out of that airport?
Yeah. Yeah.
No, I didn't even think that was open to the public.
Or I mean, maybe it was, I know I was there visiting my dad in Allentown. Yeah. So I suppose I could have, you know, wherever I flew out of, that's where I was.
No,
I
yeah,
was
you definitely could have. Yeah. I just, yeah. It's such a small airport. I didn't think it was like I didn't know nothing about the airport.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, dude. I was there visiting my dad, and this is before I had like all the drug knowledge that I have now. So mm-hmm. I had been doing a lot of drugs, and then I left without drugs and got very sick because of it. So sick that my dad sent me back early, and I was in a Minneapolis airport, and long story short, I threw up all over a black guy, and it was just truly the worst day of my life. And that's what I associate with Allentown.
That's awful.
Yeah.
Well, did you go and find this guy? He was on the plane next to you or like,
no. So it was a layover in Minneapolis. And, so I'm just sitting there sweating, freezing cold, dying. Yeah. I had been throwing up for like 3 days at that point.
Yeah.
And we were in the middle of a conversation. His name was, Jermaine or Tremaine or something, and
I just remember. No, I'm just kidding.
I remember we were sitting there, and it was like the seats were in an L shape, and I'm sitting on this side, he's sitting on this side, and we're just talking about whatever, and just no warning, no indication that it was about to happen. I'm just like, yeah, dude. So like, I'm heading back from Pennsylvania, and just projectile vomited on this guy. And what I do remember vividly is he jumped up, and the first words out of his mouth were, he goes, "What happened?" And I'm just like, I don't know, man. I'm so sorry.
Dude, that is crazy. So you slimed him.
I double dared him, man.
That is so gross and awesome.
Yeah. I felt so bad, dude. I still feel bad.
I didn't.
I wish I would have, because I 100% owe him a new shirt, new pants, new shoes.
Man, yeah.
I should have paid for his flight.
I feel like that's one of those situations where you just start like in having that guy over for Thanksgiving every year. It becomes like a feel good story.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And yeah, dude.
Meet Jermaine or Tremaine or whatever his name was, but Nick threw up on him in an airport, and ever since then he's been coming to grandma's house for stuff.
Like, if we would have had more time in that layover, I feel like we could have become friends. Like it's the kind of thing, he'd gotten cleaned up, I'd have felt a little better, and I've been like, yeah,
I don't
think
you would become friends after.
Remember that time? The thing is, he was cool, man, because he was more concerned with me being sick, which
that's cool.
More power to him. Like that was cool of him.
Yeah. I would have lost my mind. I'm like,
fuck, dude.
Yeah,
like, you dickhead. What the fuck?
Where am I going to get a 4X shirt this time of night? Have to do my flight shirtless.
Just wearing only underwear. Just
yeah.
So like little splotches of puke you missed. Man. Like, yeah, dude, it was, I'm so glad I'm not that pile of garbage anymore. It's so nice.
Dude. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Good on you for getting everything together, man. That stuff is so hard. I can't even imagine.
It's not fun, man.
Yeah.
I got out of it at the perfect time. I think I had about a month left before my luck would have run out.
Because
I was working with some like very, very dangerous drug dealers. Like the worst kind of like actual killers and shit.
Yeah.
So on that side, I feel like I would have fucked up somewhere along the way with them. Or I went my entire run of doing heroin, not a single overdose. And by that point, I was strictly doing drugs alone with no one else there. So, yeah,
which is dangerous in and of itself. Like,
exactly.
Like, you need a buddy to do. You need a heroin buddy.
Yeah, you need a heroin
spotter.
A heroin spotter.
Yeah, dude. That's,
yeah, man.
I mean, you bet 1,000 though, because I mean, there's a lot of people that, you know, aren't as lucky. You know, so that's
awesome. For sure, man. I'm definitely consider myself fortunate.
Yeah.
It,
My dog was using at the end. And I'm sorry.
Coping.
Yeah, dude.
Man, we're really hitting on a lot more serious topics than I expected to.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
No, it's all me, dude. I'm pretty sure I've been the impetus for each of these threads of conversation. I did have a couple questions for you, though.
Yeah, brother.
So you are a stand-up comic. I'm just kind of curious what your introduction to stand-up was. Like, when did you kind of discover it? Who did you like growing up? If you indeed did grow up with stand-up.
Yeah, man. I mean, like, from an early age, it was always like that, like Mad TV, all that, SNL kind of stuff. Like, that was like when I was a child. It really hit with me pretty hard, but I never like thought of ever, I like goofed around on like a home video, like a couple of times, but, and same with like when Jackass came out and like CKY, oh, yeah. Big Brother videos, all those things. Like,
hell yeah.
That like was, I love doing all that. Like just like being a menace in my neighborhood was awesome.
You and me both, dude.
But with stand-up comedy, I had like a weird introduction to stand-up comedy. Cause like somebody started showing me George Carlin early on, and it immediately kind of got ruined because the fact he was, I guess, growing up in a very broken household. So we were watching the movie in his parents or it in his like playroom or whatever. We're both in like 7th, 8th grade, and I mentioned like getting into an argument with my sister and like pushing my sister. And this dude just snapped and pulled out a knife and held it to my throat, like, and was like, "Don't ever hit your sister!" And like, dude, like, he was ready to start stabbing. And I was like, "All right, I hate George Carlin. I don't like George Carlin. Nope, I hate stand-up comedy. I never
fuck you and your seven words you're not allowed to say on TV."
Yeah. How about the seven weapons you're not allowed to pull on your friend when he's retelling a story?
Crazy, dude.
Jamming in New York, buddy. That was, and I got it on VHS afterwards because I was like, maybe I could get back because I thought it was good, but But I was, let's be honest, I was more of like a Dane Cook speed. Man, that premium blend when Dane Cook came out, I was like, now this guy knows comedy.
This is comedy.
Yeah. Him, like Nick Swardson when that Life of the Party came out.
Hell yeah.
Besides that, like I wasn't really into comedy until like I started like working at a radio station and all the like comedians that were coming to Helium would stop in. So like I got to meet so many awesome people before I realized how awesome they were. Like I got to meet like Patrice O'Neill once.
What?
Dude, he went on air. So it was like you sit in the green room, you're just waiting to go on air and it's just like awkwardly silent. And it's like right next to the production booth where I'm like working. At one point, I turn up. I'm like, "Hey, you know, just like, hey, how you doing? Hi, you need anything?"
Hi, Mr. O'Neill.
Yeah, and like, I was like, "Oh, I really think you're funny," and like, you know, just trying to be nice and stuff. And then he gets on the mic, and the first thing he says as soon as they hit record is like, "I don't get why people always say hi to people." I'm like, "No, man, this is my nightmare." But like, got to meet him. Got to meet like Greg Giraldo. Got a few times.
Dude, so far, you are the kiss of death for comedians you meet.
Ralphie May, we went to lunch. And man. And then me and Mitch Hedberg played checkers. But, yeah. And oh, my God. And I met Gilbert Gottfried. And, yeah.
Stop it, dude.
I have met a lot who have passed on. And they were all great comedians and nice people. But,
So
I did that. And then I was in a band. I'd always joke around between the songs and like make the band laugh. And there was a humor writing class at Temple University, you know, Bill Cosby's alma mater. And I was like, "Oh, I'll just go do that." Like, and then I'll do comedy too. And I like almost failed the class. I was that bad. I was like, "All right, won't do it again." And then I skipped another class at Temple to go see like a cameraman from SNL talk, like a guy who retired. And he, at the end of his like whole speech that he gives, like, it was pretty awesome learning, like hearing his stories and all that. He's like, "I got my kids in the business. You know, my daughter, writes for Leno. My son works for Conan." And I was like obsessed with Conan. Yeah. And afterwards I was like, "Dude, I would love to talk to your son about what it's like working with Conan. Like, that's just so cool." And I gave him my email and phone number, and eventually his son gave me a call and we were talking on the phone and he's like, "Well, dude, you should come intern for us." I'm like, no, no, like I did apply. And I said that. I was like, I applied, but like, I'm not, this is not why I'm called. I just wanted to hear what it was like and all this kind of stuff. And then like, he's like, no, no, I'm serious. And then like the next day, their production people called me and like set up an interview. And no, I thought I tanked the interview. So like I was doing stuff for the radio station, and I had just that morning I had put on a diaper for the radio station, where wore a diaper and a shirt, and got shot with a clam chowder cannon on air.
You know, a day at the radio.
Yeah, and I had to go shower in like somebody's room. It wasn't my room. It was just somebody's room in the hotel, and I had like 10 minutes to do it. And it was just like so sad. And like the night before that, I had the interview, and the woman says on the phone, she's like, nothing about your resume impresses me. And I was like, oh my God. And I thought, because I worked for a radio station, they're like, oh wow, okay, you have some experience. They're like, nothing impresses me. Like, your school doesn't impress me. You don't impress me. And I'm like, oh God, I just lost the opportunity of a lifetime.
Who talks
and
then I got, like that?
Yeah. And then I got shot with a chowder cannon the next morning. I'm like, my life is over. I quit. And legit, my band's playing the Trocadero. Is a venue in Philly that was pretty awesome. I think Soda recorded a special there. He's still alive, thank God.
He is.
And my band's about to, we're like the next band on in the, like this lineup. And the email comes through offering me the internship. And I had like 2 weeks to get there. So I was like, yeah, dude. And I went out there. Tested for like a monologue internship once I was there. Like they like tested from like within, and I got it. And then I just started working with the writers like every day, like providing the premises for jokes. And it very quickly became like a workshop on like how to write jokes, how to like formulate like the, you know, the formula they use for monologue. And when I came back, I was like, all right, I'm going to try to do this for real. And like what some of the advice I got from the writers was like, don't start in LA, don't start in New York. And I wanted to move right to LA. And I was like, all right, well, I'm getting married this year anyway, so I'll just learn in Philly. And then in like a year, move to LA. And then I never moved to LA. And I'm not bitter about it. I think it's fine. I actually, it is for the best. Yeah, we have an awesome setup here. So
when you say you had to test for a monologue, do you mean like you had to write a monologue for someone to perform?
No, so it was like, so the monologue jokes that they do, like Conan would do at the top of the show, you would just have to go, basically you were timed to go find like as many new stories as you could and like write the setup. Basically you would write like the setups to the jokes.
Oh, okay.
And then you would send out your list of setups to the writers, and then the writers would like, so it would be like, it would happen like twice a day. I'd submit like 20 to 30 premises, usually closer to 20, like in the morning, and then probably another 15 in the afternoon, and the writers would get them, and hopefully like the way you write the setup would inspire them to like work their magic to like do the punchline, use the formula, and like get there, you know what I mean? So it was just a matter of like who could get the most exciting like news stories, and which ones stood out to the writers. And thankfully my packet did, because they're all like, what do you call it? Anonymous. So, yeah, very lucky.
So you said every day you'd have to find like 30 plus joke setups?
Yeah. Yeah, dude. And the writers, dude. So, yeah. So, I mean, this is a long time ago. This is 2012. So it was like the presidential election was like pretty big. Like I know like the Republican GOP, like the whole thing was like a bit much bigger news story, because it was like Newt Gingrich and his moon colony, Herman Cain and his 999 plan, Mitt Romney was a robot, like all this kind of stuff going on. And so like it was just like inundated with like so much like political happenings. And so I would submit 20 to 30, and then there was like another two interns in the department who would also do the same thing. And then like Conan would be presented with like a packet of jokes at lunch. It was probably around 200 jokes from the premises we sent, because they had five writers and I think a couple of other contributing writers that would just like submit their punchlines. And man, it was so cool to see. And like I still kept some of the packets that like I'd make a photocopy, awesome. Take it down to Conan, and you'd see like I got one with like his actual markings on it, being like, here's a note on this joke. You see him rewriting it. You see him like drawing on it. What? You see him like editing the joke to be like, cut this out, make it shorter. Like suggesting that's a better awesome, yeah, dude. It was the coolest thing.
So you got to like meet Conan and shit, basically.
Yeah,
like, you
dude.
Worked pretty
dude,
close
for,
to him.
For a moment, he knew my name, which was pretty sick. Like the whole time I was there, he knew my name, which was
that's
insane.
Awesome.
It made some it made some employees jealous because he had like a 200+ person company. You know what I mean? Like between
yeah,
Team
so
Coco,
the
production,
yeah.
the editors, the so like some people in research are like, how's he know your name? Like the guy Jordan Slansky, if you're familiar with him on the show, he's like this like character that he kind of clashes with, mm-hmm. but he's like a real guy. He's not real. He's not hamming it up. Like this is a real. Like he's exactly as he is on TV. Like he went. I said, oh, hey, Jordan. And I walked by. And then apparently he asked somebody, he's like, who's executive kid's that? You know what I mean? Like, he's like, why does Conan know his name? Like, who, what, like, you know, yeah. And I was like, ah, well, I wish I was an executive's kid because, man, I'd be set up. But
that's awesome, man. That's like a weird, rare honor.
Dude, yeah. I mean, my career started backwards. You know what I mean? It started yeah. there. And then it went, came back to like Delco and like doing like a really crappy dive bar. For a long time, and eventually I got better. But the dream was always to get on Conan and be like, look, I'm back, guys. Prodigal Son returns, huh?
Oh, hell
Ten
yeah,
years
dude.
Like, yeah. And then they stopped doing the show, and I was like, well, now I'm just wandering lost in the desert. So
no goals, no aspirations.
Yeah, I was like, I want to be on next podcast Wednesday morning.
Oh, man, if anybody, yeah. if this is anybody's like career height, then...
Dude. This is it.
We'll start to picking
me,
out the casket now.
Nick, this is top of the mountain stuff for me, brother. Yeah, dude, I'm honestly so happy to be talking to you.
I'm happy to be talking to you too, man. Like, it was awesome to meet you in Chicago.
Yeah,
I met you guys at the Lincoln Lodge. That was such a fun show.
That was, yeah, you were there on Friday or Saturday?
Friday.
Yeah. Okay.
I believe, yeah.
Dude,
were you guys there on Thursday too?
No, I think we just did. We had okay. three shows, but I think it was like a. I think it was Friday, Saturday. Maybe it was. I can't remember if it was.
No, yeah. I think we were there for that Friday. Yeah.
Okay.
The Lincoln Lodge is a cool
the Darla?
Place. No.
We got yelled at for roofing a Darla on the building, and it was like, oh, shit. Yeah. It was pretty
no,
bad.
No, I did not. I was not there for that.
Thank
I mean,
God.
They couldn't
yeah.
have been too mad. I'm pretty sure Rainey is going back
yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
to Lincoln Lodge with Dad Meat.
Yeah, this guy walked out, and he's like, hey, guy, you can't do that. You can't throw stuff on the roof. And we're like, man. Just let us have no. Yeah,
that was your almost famous moment.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, but like reverse, yeah. kind of. Instead of standing
I am
on a roof,
golden you're... nugget. Yeah.
Oh man, yeah. I was sitting next to the guy that brought all the nugget buddies.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Chad. Yeah.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
Dude, it's so cool. It's so cool. Like meeting everyone and learning. Like, dude, just everyone from the chat coming to life is the coolest thing in the world.
Yeah,
dude,
and I mean, even as someone from the chat, like that
yeah.
was it was cool meeting people that I've like
yes,
spoken to
dude.
And interacted with in it, and being
yeah.
like, "Oh shit, you remember that time we were all joking about this?" Like, yeah,
yeah.
It was awesome, man. And like
yeah.
the Lincoln Lodge, I was when Mike was on here, like it's I was not expect I've never been in like such an intimate like setting before for a comedy show, and it was like
yeah.
perfect for comedy,
dude. Yeah, intimate is always better. Like
yeah.
like with I mean. Unless like Shane's coming to town and he's doing Wrigley, which would be sick, or like, you know, one of those stadiums, then that's 100% the best. But like, yeah, just anytime you can get into like a black box theater or something real tight like that's like
yeah.
low ceilings, that's the perfect environment for comedy.
Yeah.
Like that's what like if you go to Comedy Cellar, like Helium in Philly, Comedy Cellar in New York, it's all like Helium's like under a parking garage and it's very low ceilings. A perfect layout for a comedy club. Comedy Cellar's like a real tight squeeze down like the basement of a New York, like just a row of shops. You know what I mean?
That's awesome.
Yeah. Cause I've seen it and I'm like, man, I've always wanted to go. And then I hear like how tight it is like down there. And I'm like, oh man, I would just be in everyone's way. I'm a fire marshal's worst nightmare. Just blocking the stairs at every turn. No server can get by me. A comic needs to get on stage and I'm just there. You know what I mean? Like I was like, I couldn't even like, I can't even tell you like how many times like just getting to the stage. I'm like, fuck, this is like, that's
gotta be frustrating, yeah. dude.
People are like, oh, is it nervous to do stand up comedy? I'm like, it's more nerve wracking to try to get to the stage when you're as big as I am. It's like,
oh man,
Dude, it's pretty great.
That's got to be frustrating, dude. Yeah. The
if only there was something I could do about it.
I mean, yeah. It's not easy, no matter what, no matter who you are, dude.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, so like the, like you said, intimate for, is always better for comedy. And I totally agree, because for, before I really got into stand up, and I'm not a stand up comic, I just very much like, I appreciate the craft, the art form. Like I'm just a big, big fan. And before I kind of learned how much I liked the craft and was just watching it for, you know, all I saw was people who would come either here or Chicago and they would do like arenas. I saw Dane Cook at the Donald E. Pleasant Center or whatever it is.
Everyone saw Dane Cook. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. And like, I get now like why he is not as beloved as he was in the moment, but like, I don't know, man, like I feel like he brought a new generation to stand-up comedy.
Yes, dude, he did. He was
pretty important to like the history of the genre, I think.
I mean, he's like the OG like grassroots comedian with like the MySpace stuff and like getting everyone, like that's how he grew that shit, and like he became the best, like, you know, the most popular, not the best, the most popular comedian at that time for a long time. Like people were crazy about him.
Yeah, for sure. His like he was the first comedian I ever heard of doing an actual arena, which that's wild. And then I saw Kevin Hart at one, like right when he was starting his, like, it was, I think it was either after or for his, or like during the time of his second special. So he like he was big, but he wasn't like the global phenomenon he was, which was pretty cool. I mean, big enough to be doing an arena.
Yeah.
Anyway, the point of all that is that like once I finally like started going to, I live about 5 minutes away from the Milwaukee Improv.
Oh, cool. And, okay.
So once I started going there and seeing like comics who were less, you know, they weren't doing arenas, these huge places.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, holy shit, this is way better of like an environment for this kind of thing, because now thinking back, I'm like, it loses so much when you're hearing it out of a speaker. And know what I mean? Like you hear it out of a speaker at a club, but like,
well, dude, it's comedy is all about like the connection, right? So like, if you're not able to see the person's eyes and connect with someone while they're talking, like it takes you out of it. So like, it quickly becomes like an assembly. And but when you're in the room and the room's small and you know, like, you're like, did they just look at me? Like, are we like, not like, are we going to fuck? Like, I mean, like, if there's like a little bit of that connection. This? Yeah. Okay. Are you guys feeling this right now?
Is this just me? Or...
But it's just like that kind of like connection where the room's small, that's super dark. We're saying some wild stuff. And like, everyone's just like, man, like we're all in on this. This is like a cool, this is just for us. This is awesome.
Yep. Yeah. I got to see Shane Gillis at the Milwaukee Improv.
Nice.
Which I feel like it was again right before he kind of crossed that next threshold to, like, I don't think we're going to see him at the Improv again.
I hope not. I mean, for his sake, I hope not. He's killing it right now. And dude, just, you saw what he did in Toronto. He set a record for most tickets ever sold.
Most tickets sold, right? Yeah.
That's awesome, man. And he's doing like our home our club here, the Wells Fargo Center, like that's where the Flyers play. It's where I just saw Pearl Jam a few weeks ago. Like, it's like the pinnacle of indoor space. I saw Nate Bargatze there a couple months back, and like he is like dude, it's just so cool to see that, because like, I mean, it was like week after week we would do open mics together at Helium, which is again probably my favorite club. I know I'm biased, but like, just like seeing like us doing like open mics together to like nobody in the room. And with Shane, he's very like irreverent, and like he knows how to push some people's buttons. So like seeing people come back to like, people would come, this is when I knew Shane was gonna like was doing something right, is people would come back to the open mic like the next week or 2 weeks later to yell something at him and like call him just say something mean to him, and like he would always challenge it and shut it down immediately, like in like the best way possible.
Yeah.
And I was just like, man, he's like, the fact that people are coming back just to yell at him, I'm like, he's doing something right.
Yeah.
because he's sticking with him.
He is, and you know, I don't want to spend the whole time just sucking his dick, but like he is, in my opinion, right now, like the best currently doing it. And obviously, it's all subjective, I think, but dude, like I don't know, man. Yeah. There's something to his style that, like, he gives me like sitting at the lunch table with like my boys in seventh grade vibes, and I mean that in the best way possible. And like not many have that, like, kind of instilled that feeling in me, which is like awesome. So it's like it's a weird nostalgia with watching someone who's younger than me, I think.
Yeah, that's awesome, dude.
Yeah. So can you recall your best and your worst sets that you've done?
Oh, man. No.
No? Like your worst bomb?
I mean, there's so many. There's so many. One that it wasn't my worst bomb, but it just definitely the most awkward is one, like for a while, like I can do clean. I can be clean. For the longest time, I was only clean. And then I was just like, you know what? I just want to like be a little bit looser and like, you know, talk about whatever I want. But when I was clean and people were passing my name around for like private parties, corporate events, always the worst, I got asked to do a bachelor party in like, where was it? It was out near Lancaster, PA. It's like Amish country out there. So I drive all the way out to this thing. I show up to do comedy at a bachelor party at someone's house. Already
weird setting.
Yeah, dude. But hey, they're paying you. And if you're going to die, I mean, why not die in somebody's house out in Lancaster? So I get there and somebody's like waiting for me in the driveway. I'm like, oh, hey, good to see you. Like, I said something like, or you know, he goes, just so you know, like none of us drink or smoke or anything like that. I'm like, yeah, no problem. He's like, and no cursing. And I was like, yeah, that's fine. Yeah, I know to be clean. And I was like, I said something like, oh, thank God, you know, of something. He's like, oh, and yeah, don't mention God. Do not mention God here. Like he was dead serious. I'm like, okay. So apparently they were like all like born again Christian or like super Christian. And I don't know what that means, but. He starts walking
super
around.
Christian
this,
yeah, sounds super like Christian.
They're wearing capes. He starts walking around to the back of the house, and there's a giant bonfire. I'm not exaggerating; like the flames were like 20 feet high, and it's
is this
like
a
not
cult
even
meeting, dude.
Dude, it's not even sunset yet. So, like, why is it burning so high now? Like, just wait for it to get dark. You know what I mean? Like a normal
person. Right.
I get up onto the deck, and it's just like eight people sitting around a outdoor table, you know what I mean? And they're all drinking Mountain Dew and like Sierra, no, not Mountain Dew, sorry, Sierra Mist, and like other like off-brand soda, like not Coke, not Pepsi, not Dr. Pepper. It was always like the weird ones,
like one
oh,
step Sun-Kissed, below
Schweppes, like, you know what I mean? Like
Mr.
Like, all right.
Pib.
yeah dude. And I'm like, all right. And then he goes, hey guys, this is Jake, our comedian. And he's going to do some jokes, and then he just like sits down, and I'm like, what? No, you can't just. So then I have to just like start. I'm like, when do you want to do the show? He's like, now. And I'm like, oh, okay.
What the fuck, dude?
And I'm standing on the deck blocking the only exit besides like the entryway to the house. And I'm just like, all right, let's start now. And he's like, yeah. I'm like, okay, no mic, no intro. It was just, hey, this is Jake. He's going to do comedy. Sit down. And like, so I start I do my jokes. So like some guys are at the table, like not turned around all the way. So they're just kind of like doing like the look over the shoulder at me while like sipping their drinks. Like I'm not supposed to talk about anything sexual, even though it's a bachelor party or anything like that. And I'm like, this is the weirdest thing I've ever done. And like, I don't know how it could get any weirder. And like within 5 minutes of me doing a 30-minute set, 30 minutes. I guess somebody let the dog out because, you know, people were going in and out back to their kitchen.
Naturally.
For, like, more snacks. Yeah.
Because why not?
A couple of people came out and like sat down on the ground on the deck. Well, I'm like, this is getting weirder and weirder. And the dog comes out and then just starts sniffing my crotch. the whole time. Like, I'm like, so like, I love my wife so much. And I'm like, oh, just patting it away from me. And it was so painful and awkward. And like, I mean, it was a cute dog, nice dog, but like, I didn't, lovely dog. They're eating the dogs. but I didn't want to like address him smelling, you know, I was like, oh, hey, you know, normally I'd make a joke about like what me and the dog were going to do, or like make something about the peanut butter down there, you know, something dumb.
yeah.
And like, I can't even reference it because I've been told not to reference anything. And yeah, I just remember it was so painful, awkward. They like kind of gave me like a polite, like I try to do like,
I was going to say, did you get some laughs?
Yeah. Oh yeah. I got a couple of laughs, but I mean, it was just so weird. And I go to leave and the guy, I'm like bummed out about it. And thank, what made it all worth it is a guy throwing like an extra $50. And I was like, okay, so it means it was either good or he's really sorry.
Right. I'm just like I can't tell. A pity yeah. grant or whatever. Like,
yeah. Yeah. I was like, I'll take it. I was like, I need to get out of here. Right? So like, man. Wasn't the worst gig, but like definitely the most awkward, you know?
Yeah, dude. Like they might've actually been eating the dogs.
yeah.
That sounds like,
yeah.
That they, sounds yeah, so like you were, I feel like right on the cusp of like an Eyes Wide Shut situation. like it's, that sounds so
yeah,
awkward.
They were, I mean, they were all in like matching, not matching polo, but they were all in like polo t-shirts, khaki pants. Like
did you
kids
do a show
that are
for
like,
the Proud Boys, dude?
Dude, no, they were, these dudes were like, I don't know what the hell they were, but like they were like, imagine seeing, it's unnerving to see someone in their early 20s wearing khakis and a golf shirt. Unironically,
that is,
you know
was
what
it
I mean?
Tucked in, do you remember?
Yeah, oh yeah, a couple of them were tucked in. Yeah,
ouch. Yeah, man,
a lot of
that
cargo
was
shorts, a lot of New Balance.
Damn, I'm just saying, I think we're lucky to be talking to you here today. That sounds there was at least a serial killer there for sure.
Yeah, oh god, yeah,
but yeah. You mentioned Amish country. Is there really actually Amish country out in?
Oh yeah. Yeah, dude. Like an hour and a half away from, well, we're in, Prospect Park, PA, which is like an hour, I guess an hour and a half from like Lancaster. And that's where that's like the Mecca for Amish is that area. Yeah. So like we're very close to it.
Cause my only frame of reference for that is there's this TV show called Banshee. I don't know if you're familiar with it.
I've heard of it, but I've never seen it.
It takes place in a fictional town called Banshee, Pennsylvania. And there is a huge part of that show that is related to the Amish and Amish country. To be honest, for as much of a pedophile as I am, I didn't know that there was actually Amish people. Or like, really? I mean, I know there's Amish people everywhere, but I didn't know that there was like a substantial thing. Interesting.
Yeah, dude, there's that. There's them, the Mennonites, which I don't understand the difference. I mean, somebody can tell me the difference, but.
I didn't know there was a difference. I thought Amish and Mennonite were interchangeable.
I think it all relates to like the devoutness to the religion.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Ooh, if I had to guess, I would say Mennonite is the more devout.
I think it might be the opposite. I think like Mennonite is like the Amish light. Like they're the ones you see on the cell phones, working at a store, making a fireplace. Like selling fireplaces, sorry.
Yeah.
While the real Amish are just like at the barn, like you can't take a picture of them or it will steal their soul, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, dude. There's I've seen some weird videos of. I saw an Amish DUI video.
No, you
like
didn't.
Yeah,
for real?
It was and it was a horse and buggy. Just within the last week, I saw it. I don't know
That's
how
awesome.
Recent the video was, but
yeah.
He crashed into a cop car. Like his horse and buggy crashed into a cop car, and
who
this guy
gets the
was
DUI,
just
the guy or the horse.
that is true. I mean, like they had to do like horse field sobriety tests. It was nuts.
It'd be great having the horse walk the line, trot the line. Oh, man.
Yeah, dude. But man, that must suck. I mean, all due respect, nothing against the Amish. I just know I couldn't do it.
Yeah,
that's
fine. They're not listening. You could let it rip. Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, all right, fuck them. I'm kidding.
Yeah.
So pivoting again, I jump around a lot on this. How did you get connected A, with Mike Rainey and John Del Calo, and then kind of separately, unless it's the same answer, how did you come to be a co-host on Little Stinkers?
Yeah, man. Yeah, so it's like, it's all comedy. Philly's a small, like a small community with comics. And I think with Mike, I knew him for a long time. We were always kind of like at arm's length, but had mutual friends and like enjoyed what each other was doing for them. Like at usually all, like whenever we would post something, we liked it and all that kind of stuff.
He enjoyed your comedy. You enjoyed his Percocet abuse.
Yeah, dude. Yeah. Dude, he's so fun. Yeah. Mike is one of the funniest dudes.
He's great.
And he really goes for it. Like some wild premises, and it's the best, best to see it like hit hard. Well, so I would see him, not that much because he stopped going out as much. But same with John. John was he was like hosting an open mic when I first started in Philly. I think he just moved back from LA, and again, just like friends of friends, we're all kind of like circling around each other all the time, but we enjoyed each other's company. And I think Mike approached John and me about doing the podcast. And this is like after 2020 was going on, with the world shutting down, when Mike and Tim decided to start doing Dad Meat in person, Mike gave me a call to produce for them. So I was producing for them for a little bit, in the back room where we do Stinkers now. And then like about a year after doing that, Mike approached me about doing Stinkers. And I think initially I was like off the camera for a little bit, and then I was just like, you know what, dude, like we got another producer to like he got a new camera and all this kind of stuff, so we're bringing him in. I was like, you know, like I'll make the jump to the couch, and that's what we did. And then his couch has not forgiven me ever since. So
are there any so actually I have a two-pronged question here. Is there a particular episode of Stinkers that comes to mind when I ask you for the one that just had the worst subject matter of all of them?
Yes.
And then conversely, one that just, what was like one of your favorite moments? Cause you guys have done some wild shit on that show, like even like related to the subject matter, but like actually in the studio, weird, crazy shit, to something like something from there.
Early on, I'd say one of the least favorite episodes, hands down, was the Albert Fish episode.
Ooh,
like,
yeah.
Just some real fucked up shit. And, yeah, I mean, there's a couple others that were more recent that were pretty disturbing, like the Christopher Voss and the, we just did Scott Peterson. What a terrible guy, man. A lot of terrible people. So
there was so much I learned from that Scott Peterson episode. Like I thought I was familiar with like him and that case and everything, but god damn, dude.
Yeah.
He is like truly scum of the earth.
A monster, man. And but in terms of like positive, not positive, but like ones that were episodes that felt good for me that I enjoyed was Killdozer. I mean, what a heroic story from this guy. And who's the other one? The Sky King. I can't remember his name. From he's the guy who hijacked the plane like a year, or stole a plane, I should say. He's like, I don't know how to land it. I don't plan on landing it or something.
Yeah.
And then like, so sadly he took his own life, but like those tapes are great, you know, rather him have landed the plane and made it out.
Yeah.
But it sounds
he seemed very content.
Yes. And that's what kind of made it enjoyable. So,
yeah. Right. Cause it could have very easily have been just astonishingly depressing.
Yeah.
And like, is depressing, obviously, like listening. Yeah. Like you said, listening to those tapes, like he sounds at peace. He's just like, he's not trying to hurt anybody.
Exactly. Yeah. When nobody gets hurt, that's the best.
Yeah.
But yeah, like those two were probably standout moments for me. I mean, very early on, like Mike, I remember almost made John throw up by giving him apple pie with cheese melted on it.
Yeah.
And dude, he was about to throw up. Like, it was one of the funniest things I've ever seen. Cause it's just apple pie with cheese on it. You know what?
Yeah.
But it was a disturbing combo. And I understand it. But
it is, it sounds disgusting.
Yeah. I mean, like, Mike's done a lot, dude. He's, I mean, obviously drank his own piss. He's given us both small pizza boxes with cat shit in it. We did the Iceman. He had us all wearing ice the whole time. Like,
that's one of my favorite episodes.
Dude, we're having so much fun.
I just love that it melts all throughout the episodes.
Yeah. And then when he gets dressed up, man, the Travis the Chimp episode is one that just like is horrific.
He is terrifying.
It's even more terrifying to like be there while he's telling you this story and like telling you something so messed up. Well, he's done up like a chimp, and you're like, I don't know what to do. Like, I don't know if I should laugh, if I should cry. This is crazy. So,
that's so good. Yeah, dude, that is genuinely my favorite podcast. Cause like, so I write horror for a living.
Yeah.
And I like, so I am very, I thought at least very knowledgeable on like serial killers, true crime, mass murder, all that kind of shit. And obviously we've established I love comedy, so like it's like this podcast was made specifically for me.
Dude,
so,
that's like, awesome, man. Yeah.
Yeah, man.
That is perfect. And it's like, oh, you get to learn about more messed up people and enjoy it, which is awesome.
Exactly. Yeah.
Dude, that's awesome.
Yeah, last time Mike was on the show, when Mike was on the show last time, I told him I actually met and did drugs with Taylor Shabusiness.
Dude, for real?
For real.
I think I remember you putting that in the chat. I was like, there's no way.
Yep.
There's no way.
In Fond du Lac, Wisconsin. Yeah.
So it was like one of those things where you did drugs with her, and then obviously like months later, weeks later, you're like, oh my God, that's the person I did drugs with kind of thing?
Yeah. So like I have a very good memory. It's like considering all the drugs I've done, like I have a crazy good memory, and I don't remember exactly how long it was afterwards, but I remember she introduced herself as Taylor. I knew that much, and we were doing pills together, or I was doing pills at the time. I'm not sure what she was doing, but I had gone out there with my drug dealer at the time, and he was conducting business or whatever with whoever he was meeting, and I was just chilling in this random kitchen or whatever it was, and I was in her presence for maybe 10 minutes.
Dude.
And yeah, man, like, and then for that to come out, I was like, I'm pretty sure I know her. Where do I know her from? Oh shit. That's right.
That's damn. So crazy.
Like, yeah. Right. And like to her credit, I guess, like nothing jumped out at me about her. Like I didn't think anything was.
I was going to say like when you met her and then you heard the story and everything like that. And then going back to like that moment you had with her, did you ever think in your wildest dreams she had the capability of cutting off some dude's head and leaving it in a bucket?
No, not at all. I guess there was a very brief interaction with her, but nothing about her gave off that impression at all.
Yeah.
I like, to be fair though, I don't think I could think that of anybody. Even just because she's like, you know, a young woman or whatever, like I don't think I could look at a big buff dude with tattoos and be like, yeah, I can see that guy cutting off somebody's head. Like,
buff dude. I'm like, oh, he's gonna cut off someone's head.
It's your worry every time you meet someone with tattoos. You're like, hi, nice to meet you. Please don't.
That's my Pornhub search.
Oh man.
That's so crazy, dude. I don't think I've ever knowingly had contact with a murderer, which thank God.
Yeah.
I don't think I want that either.
Yeah, no, like it's and I mean she obviously is the most high profile one, but I have I like the reason I stopped, one of the reasons why, like I mentioned before, I felt like I only had about a month left out before my luck ran out. I was with some very dangerous people at the time, and like I had already been trying to like sever my connection to these guys because like I had seen some truly horrific things being around them, and they were like the types of people that you meet and you do get a bad feeling. And yeah. like, it was scary as hell, man. And yeah, but anyways, yeah, I did not have any of that with her. She was perfectly polite, if not high yeah. as fuck. And
just vibing.
Yeah, vibing, just getting ready to go fucking slaughter somebody, as hey, one
do
does.
Do you have a bucket I could borrow?
I'm looking for a torp.
Yeah, dude, that's so crazy. Yeah, oh, man, yeah. Dude, with the podcast too, like going back to like some of the favorite things we've done, like the murder field trips we've done, like
oh hell yeah,
have been insane. Like the first year we went to Spawn Ranch and La Cielo Drive, and like the scenes from all that, and then OJ Nicole Brown Simpson's house and OJ's house, and just like the gravity of just being in those locations was insane and so highly disturbing. And then by yeah. year two, like I feel like Mike upped the ante with, we went to Casey Anthony's house in Orlando, and not her current residence, but like
yeah.
the, where everything went down, sadly. Mm-hmm. And
she's and then, another despicable one,
dude. Yeah, Mike's in love with her, so be careful. And Taylor, so yeah, I should have forgot. Yeah, I should have mentioned that. But then we went to Aileen Wuornos's apartment in like that motel room, and mm-hmm. that was probably the scariest place I've ever been in my life, because really? Like, everyone was, their jaws were wiring like back and forth like the whole time. They're just like you know what I mean, like that kind
oh,
of.
Oh yeah.
Like, and yeah, you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And I just remember been like. There. The place was falling apart to begin with in the middle of the day. And it was so disgusting. Like, we ate food at the room, and we all opted to eat it outside of the room. That's how gross the room was.
Oh.
Yeah. And it was like a motel. So people were like hanging out in their like plastic chairs outside the room. You know what I mean? Like, damn. Couples.
So,
and,
like, it was exactly like the movie Monster,
dude,
about
yes.
Aileen Wuornos.
Yeah. And it starts getting dark, and we're inside like filming something. Like, we have it on our YouTube, the Ouija board scene, and like yep. some walking a mile in alien shoes and stuff, and we're filming like a Ouija board scene, and like in between like one of the takes, we just hear people right outside our window, and a couple of Mexican dudes pulled up. They just happened to be Mexican. Just wanted to point that out and cough through it, make it even more awkward. Mexican.
But they're like, you know what talking, I'm saying.
They're talking very loudly on the phone right outside. And like, they're clearly trying to look into our room to see what's going on. Cause like we're goofing off and yelling a bunch of shit. You know what I mean? Like, we're filming yeah. some shit. And we're dressed up like women, and like, it's so stupid. And they're like trying to like, what's happening in this room right now? Cause to them, this is their business. And I didn't know yeah. that. It's like nighttime, that motel just shuts down. And like, okay. I mean, all of it, like every single light was off in the motel.
So what did they like hook
front
out
office,
of
the sign, everything. So these Mexican dudes pull up when it's nighttime, and I guess just set up camp for like people to come in and buy drugs.
Oh, okay.
And they had shit. Stations. Like a dude was like standing at the light post blasting like a Mexican radio station from his phone. And then like another dude was just like walking the parking lot, hands behind his back. And then there was somebody else on the other side. And then somebody was like running to get food and coming back. And he was stationed closer to the front desk. Which,
so it was like,
man,
a whole operation.
Dude, yes. And lights were out too. The guy yeah, who, crazy. The Indian guy who ran the place, like who showed us a room, his jaw was wiring back and forth. So we're pretty sure like he was getting paid to do this. And yeah. like when he showed us a room, our room, he took off his shoes to like walk into the room and show it to us, which is like, you don't need to show us the room, just give yeah. us the key. And like, he's walking barefoot like through the room the whole time. He's like, this is so gross.
That's
and
so nasty.
Yeah. And we get done filming, we're starting to load the car. Like, it got to be so dark and so scary, like we're like, all right, we're just gonna get out of here. The plan yeah. was to sleep the night there, but it was, the room was so tiny, there was no way we could even have cots. So it'd be like me, Mike, John, and Danny Dubs sleeping in one full bed together. It's like, this is not gonna happen.
I would pay money to see that.
Yeah worth. I bet you would, you pervert. And we start loading the equipment into the back of the car, and the dude who's just walking the parking lot with his hands behind his back just like comes like almost shoulder distance to us, just like looking in the back of our van, but then just like kept like just like strolling by. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I'm like, hey, how are you? And just like nothing. Like he's just kind of like seeing like what he's just like just pricing it up kind of. I feel.
Okay. Yeah. I was going to say, do you think he was like casing it or was he just curiosity?
I think it was both. I think it was like curiosity. And then he saw something valuable and was like, okay, maybe like
the wheels started turning and.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. You start to get carried away, but then to do that and then like race back to our place in Orlando, cause that was in like Port Orange, I think it was called. Florida. Mm-hmm. And we took it to we go back to Orlando and the next morning we go to Disney World, which is like what a
the
weird
opposite
flip.
Of where you were.
The scariest place on earth to like the sweetest place on earth within 12 hours, and it was insane.
That's
this
wild,
was weird.
Dude.
Yeah. Man, and this year too, dude, we saw John Wayne Gacy's like his where his property sat
in
very
Chicago,
disturbing.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think I've seen
then,
that episode.
Well, we didn't do a video on it. We just visited, just pay our respect. No, in a way.
Yeah, sort of.
Also disturbing that like his house was like a block away, one block over from a school that was like a couple blocks in, which is so disturbing.
Yeah, dude, he was like a community figure, man. People loved him, which is scary.
And then just in Austin, we have like a couple of cell phone videos, but like we visited Waco and I mean, if Mike and John weren't with me, I would have became a Branch Davidian probably that day. Woman was so convincing. As soon as we walked in, she was just like, the government did this to us. They knew that, you know, we knew they were selling guns illegally. And I'm like, oh my God, that's good.
So she was like
she was super sweet and very unsuspecting to like start hitting about the government so hard. I was like, okay, clearly she knows
wild.
Her stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. And her husband was a member of the Davidians up until 85. And I think Koresh came in and she said 86 or 88. And then after the incident happened, her husband came back to run the church in like 93 on, I think. Or whenever Waco happened on, yeah.
Are they still like
thriving.
An entity?
Yeah,
really?
Dude, it's so crazy.
Kidding.
They built a new church on the site of the compound. So there's signs everywhere. There's still a lot of the ruins of Koresh's compound.
And
I did not expect it to be so. I mean, it's such a sad situation, but like, it was somber, dude. It was like one of the saddest places I've ever been because of like, just the ruins of the place and knowing what happened and how many people were innocently slaughtered. That, and then, seeing the site of the JFK assassination was probably,
I've been there.
That was so cool. I didn't realize how excited I was going to be
there.
Dealey
Plaza.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Dude, what a cool spot.
Yeah, it really is. Like it's crazy how you really can like, cause you could do like the tour or whatever and, like you can almost like step by step it and just see, like walk yourself through the whole like process of how it all went down. And it was snowing when I did the
really.
Yeah.
Wow.
Dude, such bullshit, dude. It was blizzarding up here. It was January 2017. Yeah. I think it was blizzarding up here. Kimmy and I leave to go down to Texas to visit my dad.
Yeah.
And we're like, nice, we're gonna leave this shitty weather behind and go down to warm, sunny Texas.
Yeah.
The day we get there, it starts snowing. Does not stop snowing until the day we leave. And then it stops snowing that day in Texas, resumes snowing up here when we get back.
Dude, how many times did your dad say, oh, you brought it with you, huh? Like, I feel like that's like
so the, many, dude. Yeah. So many. And you
man,
know what?
You guys brought
he's
this.
Right.
Yeah.
He was right.
Since you've been at Dealey Plaza, do you think there was a second shooter?
So I do waffle on this quite a bit. Like, I can't say 100% if I believe that there was a second shooter. I think that whatever happened, we don't know. Like, we don't know what exactly it was. But I think I lean towards there being a second shooter.
See, it's interesting you say that because I was always kind of convinced there had to be a second shooter,
but after having been there, you can
having
kind of
been
see
there
how
and realizing how small that area really truly is. And I mean, it's so close to the highway. Like they were seconds away from leaving Dallas.
Yeah.
That's what's so crazy about it. They were so close. They're what, on the way to give the speech somewhere, right? And I mean, I'm always like, oh, grassy knoll. Yeah, there definitely had to be somebody there. Cause like, I've watched the slow down footage. I've seen like the, you know, when the blood shoots out, like, and like the trajectory and stuff like that.
The angle and all that.
Yeah. And I'm like, okay, this is super convincing. But then being there, seeing the trees next to the book depository, I'm like, okay, if these are the same trees, they were much smaller at that time, probably like newly planted. It probably was a newish plaza. So the sight line was clear. And
yeah. And
when you see like they have X's on the road of where he was shot, it's very, very plausible that it was like a shoot, pump, reload, shoot again kind of moment.
Yeah.
So,
see, now that you say that, I'm like, yeah. So it's almost like I can equally believe, I think, that it could have been Lee Harvey Oswald. But also, if it were to come out that there was a second shooter, I'd be like, okay, yeah, I buy that.
Well, it's too. Like, yeah, it's like, who paid Lee Harvey Oswald to kill him? You know what I mean? Like,
right.
That's what it comes down to. Because like, if it was my theory, which is totally not based in anything, there's no knowledge behind this, is like, if I was the shooter, you know, and I take that first shot, say if there's two shooters, right? You take that first shot, and you see that you just like, you grazed him in some way. I feel like you'd go into panic mode and definitely pull the trigger again. So I feel like you have the one guy on the grassy knoll, like waiting for his turn or whatever to make the shot. Meanwhile, the book depository gets the first one in. But I feel like you're trying to ensure that he's killed. I feel like both of them would have fired two shots and there would be four bullets rather than
that
two. You know what
is
I mean?
A good
Especially
point,
after
actually,
the first
yeah.
one doesn't kill him.
Right.
You know?
That's a very good point, yeah. But the Irishman said that it was the mafia who organized the killing of JFK.
Damn.
I don't know if you... Yeah, right. Like the, I'm pretty sure that's one of like the prevailing theories of it, is that the Italian mafia, because there was a lot of friction between like Bobby Kennedy and Jimmy Hoffa and obviously like all that kind of stuff. It's crazy. I love though, like when there is a piece of history like that, and the JFK assassination is the perfect example of it. When people will like break down every single frame of a video of something, and then something from every frame gets its own conspiracy theory. Like there's a guy with an umbrella there, and then there's also like a lady wearing a babushka. And like both of them have their own sets of conspiracy theories as to who they are, what their role in the assassination was.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, I don't know. I love that kind of stuff.
Dude, I do find it weird that all the footage we've seen, like knowing that the president motorcade is coming through in that time, you don't have cell phone cameras. You have actual cameras. All of the footage that we've seen are from the one side.
Yeah, I agree.
There was people on the other side. In that center area. So why have we not really seen photo? I mean, maybe they exist. I just haven't, they're less popular, but like, yeah, if people were on the grass on the other side with a camera, like you could have seen like who, if the book depository window is open, you know what I mean? Like there's all these, I don't know. You could have seen towards the grassy knoll from that side. So like,
yeah,
why don't we have that stuff?
It is weird that,
you're telling me people were living in the moment back then. Is that what you're telling me, Nick?
I don't believe it. In all of human history, no. If there was capability of filming what you were doing, they were doing it.
Yeah, dude.
But damn, man, we are actually at over an hour already. That just flew by. Jake Matera, thank you so much for dropping by the podcast. Again, I truly appreciate it. What if people want to find you, your comedy, your shows, where can they do so?
Yeah, Nick. Dude, thanks again for having me. This has been such a blast. I always enjoy talking to you, man. If you want to check out my stand-up, I have a special on YouTube. Man, I'd love to get it to 50,000 views. It's really been stuck at 46,000. I mean, listen, just go to a local library, put on full volume, just play it, for at least 15 seconds from all the computers for me. I think that's all you need is like 15 seconds for it to count as a view or something. Just yep. Come on, man. Help me out. I'm trying to get to 50,000 just so that I could talk to my parents again because they said they wouldn't talk to me.
It's a good special. It is a very solid
thanks,
special.
Thanks, man.
A soft one.
Yeah, a soft one. Yes. Thank you. Yeah, dude. Should not have recorded it during the pandemic, but I was very impatient and I just wanted to get it done. Yeah, check out Little Stinkers. We have so much fun. We're doing so much cool shit. If you're in the San Francisco area or Bay Area, I should say, like we're doing San Francisco October 22nd and Sacramento October 23rd. And we're going to have so much fun, man. There's so much more stuff coming down the pike for our Patreon, like that I can't wait for people to see.
It's the best Patreon there is, dude.
Oh, dude, thank you.
Hell yeah. Thanks, well, man. Thank you again, Jake. I will definitely... Oh, links for everything of yours will be in the description, show notes, all that. So thank you again, man.
Thank you, brother.
All right, take care.
All right, see ya.